Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Neil and Kristen Bacon, the Neil and Kristen Bacon Psychic Hour. No, bacon is something we never eat.
No.
We are not bacon fans. We are Neil and Kristen Baker, however. Sorry, my tongue has been getting tired.
Well, yesterday is Kevin Bacon.
Anyway, here we are, Wednesday. And on the last show, we got quite busy with callers and didn't get to our topic, which we wanted to wrap up on Friday. So we're going to have an opportunity to do that today. That's what we're going to start the show with. And before I do that, or before we do that, I should say, we want to invite people who are listening and our callers to join us on Blog Talk Radio as well as Facebook. And on Twitter, those accounts are linked under the Blog Talk Radio profile. And the call-in number, 914-338-0164. Please do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. And the number for further conversation, 562-596-7818. That's the number to call after the show is done. But again, 914-338-0164. So we've been talking about balance of body, mind, and spirit, but we really didn't get to the aspect of balanced spirit in our previous conversation. I mean, not in depth. So, you know, short of complete fanaticism or total lack of faith, there's still imbalance within spirituality that can be found within those two extremes.
Oh, sure. There can be balance within spirituality. Well, I mean,
and imbalance. So
balance and
imbalance between those two extremes is what I was saying. But,
you know, you can have a priest that is very astute in religious conduct in terms of the laws and the practices and the rituals.
Knowledgeable in terms of theology, et cetera, et cetera.
They, you know, sexually abuse children or whatever. That's an imbalance.
And rabbis can do it too.
Rabbis.
So we want to be equal opportunity.
Rabbis. Spiritualists, people who run communes, and I mean, it goes on and on. Of course, you can. You can also have someone who has who's very strongly spiritual. This Tennis McKenna, who struck me as being very intelligent.
Terence McKenna.
Yeah.
Terence McKenna.
Yeah, you know, the philosopher, kind of philosopher. Very brilliant. And I don't know about his personal life, but he was an advocate of psychedelic mushrooms, and I don't know, he ended up with a brain tumor. But you know, is that a conflict? I don't, you know, someone who indulges in psychedelics or drugs, he was more of a mushroom advocate. Can you call that an imbalance of spirituality to some extent?
So
because.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. Well, I was gonna just mention that, you know, many of the native cultures use ayahuasca and peyote and things like that.
We're not going into the deep wilds to find primitive tribes. You know, they also hold spears and they do all kinds of things. They hunt animals.
Right. But I'm not talking about, you know, what we apply from their lifestyle to a modern lifestyle, but I'm just talking about the use of it in those cultures as opposed to,
you know. The true balance of spirituality does not need to be enhanced by drugs. It's an energy of the body itself, that what the body produces in terms of the mind, body, and soul, and the mind itself and the aspects of faith and whatnot. It's in the form of the integrity of the seven chakra, meaning that there is a direct link that we can have to the creator, God, whatever you want, spirits, the astral realm, that does not require the use of drugs. It doesn't reach down and become off balance by the power of another chakra, like rich people who can be very spiritual. Boy, they can be so spiritual, but all they think about is money too. And they work towards the goal of making money. I mean, well beyond the means of what would normally be considered legitimate pay or income. The aspect of someone who is very spiritual but very intensely sexual and more or less abuses others through sexuality or takes advantage of others. That could be one. Someone who... spiritualists who are very cold in manner and really or aloof and have forgotten how to really be in touch with people, that could be cause an imbalance of the fourth chakra. People who abuse the language of spirituality, but they're very spiritual, but they abuse the language. Maybe they go home and they're different at home than they are in the social world outside of the home. That can be an abuse, an imbalance of the fifth chakra. So the attitude of what is the balance of spirituality? The balance of spirituality encompasses compassion, empathy, consistency of manner,
integrity, faith.
Like,
but, you know, when you say that there are people that are very spiritual that are doing all these different things, that would be counterintuitive to actually being spiritual. Then you have to question whether it's being, you know, classifying these individuals as spiritual or spiritualist is really an accurate term, because it really doesn't all fit under the umbrella
of
spirituality.
I mean, you can have a policeman, a cop, who's a cop, but you can be a corrupt cop. You know, it doesn't, the title itself, anyone could call themselves a spiritualist. I mean, I guess you can go into different schools of thought and say, well, you should be licensed, you should be ordained, something like that. But spirituality is a God-given thing. We all have the right to be spiritual. And spiritual is people who just worship nature can say, well, I'm a spiritualist. I'm an atheist in essence, but I worship nature, and that is my form of human spirit. Well, there's no argument there. We're not defining spirit in terms that it has to be one way in terms of the consistency of spirit in that context. What we're saying is that spirituality is not confused with the imbalance of another chakra that would thereby sort of eliminate the true aspect of spirituality in any given thought or field.
Right.
So what is the balance of energy? The balance of energy is that every chakra, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and even beyond, there's two immediate right above the crown, is balanced. There's purity in it. You see purity within the context of the totality of the human being, spirituality being the utmost and the highest form of human behavior. So when you look at all that and you consider, is there balance within the body, mind, and soul of a person? You can have a situation where people can be very talented and profess to be spiritualists, and they can be very articulate and artistic and have wonderful things, but then they drink, or they indulge in drugs, or they, you know, love to have extramarital affairs or something like that. Is that balance? No, I don't think so. But it doesn't take away, it's not that it takes away from their spirituality. It just means that there isn't a totality of balance within the human being. And that's what we're talking about. That when you open up the psyche of a human, that you find within them from head to toe a sense of balance and authenticity and things like that. So how hard is it to be balanced? I think it's extremely difficult. I think it takes discipline, because we are human beings who have impulses and desires. And not that an impulse or a desire is bad. They aren't. They motivate us. They move us. They convince us that we're humans with feelings. But when those impulses and the complexities of vices and things like this tend to allow us to lead a shadowed life, that's the shadowed life aspect, to show that not all human beings are basically balanced. You have to look at your shadow world, what you do in private, what you do that you wouldn't necessarily show to everybody. The life of an individual should be open and transparent. Of course, we are allowed our privacy, and we are allowed our soft indulgences in life. You know, we're not talking about that everybody has to be the straight-laced energy. But we're on the topic, and we're not insinuating that I'm either myself or Kristen, far from perfect. But what we're stating is, what is the true meaning of being a balanced human being? And I think what that means is that whether you are seen or not seen, that your behavior has a certain merit to it, that there isn't anything going around in your world that is prompting you to be dark. And then that, even that term, what can be defined in many diverse ways. But we're not talking about, hey, I love comic books, you know, and I got a comic book collection I'll tell you very about. And in my private moment, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the soft core things that really don't get into the subject of mind, body, and soul. We're obviously talking about darker things, you know. Hey, I go on the internet and I look at child porn. Now, that's not comic books. That's different energy. And so it's obvious that for the sake of argument, we're trying to define what the line is between a balanced human being and an imbalanced human being.
Well, and I think even beyond, you know, these elements of darkness that an individual can hold within that creates an imbalance, people can live a fairly balanced life in, you know, in terms of their morality and, you know, different themes of the chakras, their home, their family, their creativity, but they can also be somewhat, I don't want to say delusional, because delusional is such an extreme word, but misled in terms of their spiritual practice, beliefs. There's so much information today available, you know, because of the internet, and there's a lot of things that exist that are very misleading. And then, you know, when people start to believe fallacies, then it creates an imbalance as well. So, you know, having a strong rooted sense of spirituality and a realistic view of what's accurate and not accurate is also a part of that balance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but you know, when you look at truth, truth is also meant to be broken. The world is not flat.
Well, some people believe you know that there's a big flat Earth movement.
You know, around the sun. The
there really is.
There are certain, you know, the bubonic plague wasn't caused by demons. There are certain attitudes that we have to have in order to break the so-called truth. Even when one is eccentric, when we have eccentric artists that have Picasso and people like that that have tested the limits of what is supposed to be conventional wisdom or conventional mores and morals and things like that. We have to have those people that have that kind of eccentric quality of thought. We're not talking about that, obviously.
No.
That is not a sense of imbalance. That's a sense of evolution, the evolving sense of mind. We're talking more about, I guess what we're talking more about is in the terms of ethics. We get into that deep topic, Aristotle style of ethics, and what is ethical, what creates an ethical human being according to the standards. You know, I mean, if you're in Nazi Germany and you're hiding Jews and the Nazis say that's not ethical, you know, we have to determine beyond the limitations of what is considered to be proper social conduct or our state-induced laws. What is ethical? BLM. You know, when we get into the idea that we have to suddenly separate human beings and designate, well, Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, we have to look at humanity as a whole, essentially. So if we get into the concept that humanity is not a whole, then we get into the concept that others can mistreat others because we don't, we reduce them to something less than human, and that is not considered balance.
Well, I mean, the nature, I mean, we have to consider ourselves as a whole, yes, but the nature of the planet is division. I mean, duality. So it's hard to achieve that wholeness.
Well, duality with equality.
I agree, absolutely.
Yeah,
equality,
we have to
yes.
have equality in terms of our differences, and it gets sometimes foggy. I mean, is there ever a time to pick up arms, bear arms? Is there ever a time to defend? Is there a time to kill, a time to love? Yeah, I mean, of course. Proverbs will even state that, and the birds made it popular. But the attitude of when is that proper? You know, it gets very, very foggy here on Earth in terms of when do we step outside of the realm of balance, so-called balance, and take a stand, make a statement, produce an action in the cause of bringing back to the human scale at large a sense of equilibrium and balance. So sometimes it's a little bit difficult. What we're talking about is sheer abuse. Abuse and mistreatment, murder, things like this, corruption, whereby the imbalance on a humanitarian level is quite evident. More or less those forms of imbalance that are within the individual themselves. So we have to think that, first of all, look at yourself. I think that's the first part. If every human being on the planet could look at oneself, and really get a pure rational sense of balance, this world would be a lot better off. It's not going to happen. I mean, we don't live in that kind of world where human beings are monitored and built to be morally and ethically and spiritually, body-wise, mind-wise, balanced. We just aren't. And that's just too bad, but that's the human condition. I think what life is a striving towards balance, that as we grow and learn and conduct ourselves within a world that is inhabited by millions of other people, we have to get to the sense of how do we not only balance ourselves in such a world, but how does our balance maintain a sense of balance when we interact with others? I mean, perfect. One of the smallest but perfect cases is road rage. I mean, right there in an instant, there can be a sense of imbalance within not only a person's entire chakra system, but the invasion upon somebody else's chakra system. So it's much easier to be in balance than it is to be balanced. Balance takes
to be imbalanced.
Yeah, much
just
easier.
for the recording, because it sounds imbalanced. You know, I heard imbalance. So imbalance. It's much easier to be imbalanced than be in balance.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a mistake. It takes more than breathing. It takes more than yoga.
Right. So that's, you know, like getting into these spiritual practices, and you know, the fact that, you know, many people are in religious groups, and there are many, obviously, differing viewpoints and faiths, and how to remain balanced in when there's so much division in the spiritual community, in the religious community.
Oh, of course. I mean, I mean, Attila the Hun can take a yoga class just as much as Gandhi can. And they can both breathe and learn how to breathe. It's not so much that the individual, him or herself, learns the motions or the techniques of balance. And combines that with a sense of spiritual breath. It's also in the conduct.
Right. It's about the application of those things to the daily life.
To the daily life itself. Because, you know, you have to kind of look at what it is, whatever it is you're about to do in this world. And even if it is to break the law, to break the confinement of conventional thought, to be a rebel or a revolutionary or an innovator of any kind of energy, the aim is to do it in a sense of the advancement of thought that promotes more well-being. I mean, you know, people called the Beatles evil when they first came. They thought they were evil. And look how they revolutionized music and opened up a whole new stage. Jazz was considered evil. I mean, the twist was considered evil. We're not talking about the standards of social convention. That's not what we're discussing in terms of what throws something off balance, or someone in the family saying, I don't want to be a doctor. Yes, my whole family were doctors. I want to be an artist. I want to be a painter or something like that. Oh, heaven forbid. What's wrong? You're disgracing the family. Do you know what you're doing to this family by not following in the family practice? Well, there's right there. Is that person evil? Is there something wrong with that person? You know, even when we get into the idea of in this day and age of people who believe they were born gay, believe they're transsexual, are they evil? Is there something wrong with them? Must they be corrected? Oh my God, get them to a psychiatrist. These were the old days of thought. But, you know, as we progress into the ultimate area of balance as a human society, we set our standards and we set our conditions. Now there's a great contest going on whether a baker, not one of us, a baker is allowed to decline
making a cake for a gay wedding.
A gay wedding. I suppose if somebody runs their own business, they have the right to refuse.
Yeah, because
you see that in restaurants.
Your point when we were discussing this the other day was that, you know, a person who's baking cake should have the right to decline putting a swastika on a cake.
Yeah, I mean.
So,
you know,
I mean, it has to apply, even though we may not morally agree with someone declining to make a same-sex marriage cake.
No.
But, you know, that may be the right of the business owners.
Of course not, you know,
right.
Or, you know, going to a, you know, you're going to a formal party and you want to wear swimming trunks and you're not allowed in. I mean, it gets a little bit ridiculous after a while, but I think there is a form that one who has one's own business can make a decision whether they want to serve somebody or not.
Right, because the restaurants say we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone who walks in.
Right.
So it's
a different, that it gets a little bit more difficult. Of course, I suppose I'm speaking for Kristen too. We don't believe in a baker saying, I'm not going to bake a cake for a gay couple.
Right.
I mean, on record, that's, to us, that's absurd. But does a person have a right to refuse service to somebody because that's what they believe? Or do we pass laws that now that's off balance and they're the crazy one and they have to conform? I mean, it's a great topic of debate about what we do or do not accept in our world.
Well, you know,
especially if the person believes it goes against their belief system.
So it's interesting because this came up on another topic. I believe it was like 6 weeks ago, there was planned Nazi rallies in San Francisco. And basically the Nazis were driven out of San Francisco. And so there was a big debate about whether the free speech, the right to free speech was infringed upon for these Nazis, but it's also, you know, what is being communicated like by groups like this, which, you know, isn't just their propaganda, but, you know, the fact that they're, you know, suggesting that Jews should be killed and things like this. So where is the line of free speech, you know, in this
more
case?
More poignant than that even is in Germany itself, where Nazis or swastikas are not even allowed. They're
right.
Outlawed. And now Merkel's government is being challenged by people more on the far right who are suggesting that that there were no atrocities during World War II and that they should revive the national anthem and praise some of the soldiers and things like this, which was since the 1948 and whatnot, was virtually outlawed, more so as time went on. But now it's being challenged again. And even in our country, where Trump says that many of the neo-Nazis were very, very fine people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you define a noun such as Nazi or neo-Nazi with an adjective such as fine, you know, it begins to become a sort of issue of suggestion that the more you say it, the more it's accepted. And it becomes more of a repetitive pattern that we now conform to the idea that that is the new balance. But that's still noteworthy of topic. That what is the true nature of balance, and is it defined by society, or is it defined by the individual, apart from society,
right,
who thereby by insistence makes it part of society's mores and regulations?
Can
you regulate balance? I mean, when we get to this aspect of what is true balance? What are we really talking about, you suppose? What are we really talking about in our discussion of what is the true balance of an individual? We're talking about
the balance of all the chakra systems.
Yeah.
The balance of all the chakra systems. Never mind.
What were you going to say?
No, it was back to a political thing, but, you know, in terms of balance, but it's not
it.
Well, no, you know, another thing that's come up in terms of, you know, in this issue of balance is the NFL players, you know, protesting. Taking a knee and linking arms during the national anthem to protest violence that has been inflicted upon African Americans by the police, and Trump is championing his case against these athletes and trying to persuade the NFL owners to fire the players, you know, and he's talking about respecting our country, but, you know, in the same token, he's, you know, getting us into war with North Korea and, you know, trading barbs that, I mean, it's kind of unprecedented that this has happened with world leaders that we're calling, you know, names like Little Man and Rocket Man. That's right. And, you know, and he's stating that, you know, these people are wrong for, you know, protesting, which is a constitutionally protected right. And I know these are private employees, but they're also playing in public stadiums, which supports constitutional rights because it's funded, those stadiums are funded by taxpayer dollars, so on and so forth. So there's a question of, you know, what the First Amendment covers in that.
Sure. And, you know,
capacity.
I mean, locker room talk can be colorful and fun and all that. I remember there was a sports movie that came out that just shocked the country because it showed the real dialogue of what sports characters say in the locker room. I can't remember the movie. But Trump has made it his anthem that locker room talk can now be applied to government. That we, you know, in his locker room mentality of vocabulary, where he can state that, oh, well, that was locker room talk about groping the woman and
yeah,
all this stuff. Now he's using, and locker room talk is usually name calling. That's just locker room talk.
It's not necessarily about denigrating females. That's not
right.
Right.
But there's nothing wrong. I mean, Don Rickles did it. But, you know, Trump, the president, to use locker room talk, to use rough language in terms of dealing with the world and considering that the responsibility is not that he's going to have a couple of buddies around him in the locker room laughing at his antics or his colorful language, but he has a whole nation. We're talking about nuclear weapons. And to gamble so recklessly with language when you have one egomaniac over the other and fighting with fingers away from buttons that can destroy lives.
Right, and he's worried about people kneeling in a national anthem to protest something that's a valid issue. I mean, that's ridiculous to me.
Kneeling, and then would you have been mad if a black person...
You're getting us into nuclear war and you're worried about whether they kneel.
Whether they kneel. Or, not sitting at the back of the bus anymore. Or sitting down at a restaurant counter and being served. Or using a white, quote, white drinking fountain. There's nothing wrong in our nation with making a statement about what one believes.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with it. And you can still be American and still be patriotic. There's a lot of crazy people who are standing up with their hands over their hearts during the national anthem.
Right.
And you wouldn't even want to break bread with them.
Exactly. And I think that it's important if you're in the public eye to be using your position to influence people in a positive way. And it's better than, stupid posts to Twitter or Facebook about, whatever it is going on in these athletes' life, which, a lot of times is superfluous junk, what's put out by certain people. So the fact that, people that are in the public eye are making a stand over something that really matters, I think it's very positive, not negative.
Well, what is? I mean, not to abuse the term, but he is the leader of the free world. It's not free for all. It's not the leader of the free for all world, but
exactly.
Leader of the free world. And in that free world, we have expression. Yeah, it gets tough at times. It really gets tough at times in terms of do we allow certain speakers to speak and whatnot. Maybe in a very well conducted forum that is well protected, does somebody have a right to express their ideas? Yeah, I mean, if we're going to live in a free nation, the expression of ideas is still very precious to the psyche of that nation. It's not right to censor really anybody. But of course, if there's an intent to incite violence or to cause bodily harm to somebody, well, then that's when the practice is somewhat...
Right, there's a gray area.
Limitations.
Right.
But what we're talking about... Our nation was built on independence. Independence from Britain. We the revolutionaries considered evil people and off balance. Well, at the time, the British thought so, and a lot of the colonists believed so. But when we we wouldn't be here today if there wasn't a stand.
Yeah, and aren't we coming up on Columbus Day, another controversial holiday?
Yeah.
That's
another
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
didn't LA change it, Los Angeles?
No.
It's not Columbus Day anymore because
that's
of
right.
the controversy. But anyway, I'm sorry, Neil, go
but,
ahead.
But, and then for the leader of our nation to start to dictate to the NFL who should or shouldn't be hired, who should be fired.
His role as leader of the quote free world
to
he's free to say what he wants, but he's using his influence in a way that is totally inappropriate.
Yeah, off balance of power. When one becomes, power doesn't become what's an authoritarian attitude. You don't become an authoritarian or a dictator and start to construct in your what you believe to be your ideals, the ideals of the entire world. This has to be a community of thought and discussion and forum. Maybe these people need to, you need to put a matter of content in these persons' minds. Let them speak. Kneeling is just an act. It's just a physical act.
And it's not an offensive physical act. I mean, think about it, kneeling in the pews during certain parts of mass. I mean, it is not a violent act. It's a passive act.
Yeah.
It's a prayerful act. I mean, so.
I mean,
they're not throwing,
Even when we get into the element of the school system, the unified school system, when certain religions don't attend school on certain days, on certain holidays, when the Jewish people have their holidays, they go to school, they come back, they're ridiculed. I mean, this happens. This very much happens. So I think that the colorful nature of balance is that we respect and learn about other people's cultures. I think the diversity in our country of different cultures and nationalities and religions and customs and foods. I mean, why don't we just start throwing out every Mexican restaurant? Why don't we get rid of the Middle Eastern restaurants? They don't belong in America. I mean,
well, I mean, obviously
ridiculous.
You're being facetious. Yeah,
of course. I'm being facetious because we get into the idea that that this is a tapestry of human content, and that it blends into one form of humanity. Humanity is not confined to be just one thing. So we're getting to that area of the unity and the balance of diversity. Can you have diversity and still maintain a sense of balance? Of course.
Right. And within the individual, a sense of diversity while maintaining balance.
But that's just it.
Yeah.
Look how easily disunity erupts, not only between two different people of diverse natures, but even within ourselves.
Within ourselves.
We start to contradict our better natures. We do it every day. Every single day we do it, we commit these little crimes.
I'm going to take notes of yours. I'm going to get a little journal and mark them down.
Mark them down.
Teasing,
Bill
of course.
Pfeiffer did a wonderful play called Little Murders. I think it was called Little Murders. About the little acts that we commit. Joseph Pfeiffer was a great cartoonist, now since deceased, but very brilliant person, very creative. And I believe he did a play called Little Murders. But, you know, every single day we commit these acts. Our minds start to battle. Oh, I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to. And right there, in a very small scale, we commit a crime against the element of balance. So balance, I think, is a very, very hard thing to maintain, more or less contain, attain. And in that regard, it becomes rather difficult. But one of the aspects moving into balance is, first, I think people should make a checklist. What are your ideals? What do you believe in? How do you look at your life in terms of the different levels of your existence, in your home, in your job, in your relationship, in your standards of higher learning, in the promotion of thoughtful and spiritual content? List the things that you believe are accurate according to your ideals and motivations towards those ideals. And then on the other side of the column, write down how well you maintain, attain, and reach those aspects and those ideals. And then in a separate column, write down the things that you believe to be your shadow existences, the things that you're not too proud of. How many things do you do during the day that result in an off balance of conduct? And keep a list. You don't have to show it to anybody, but what it does is it makes the individual responsible.
Right, and just a consciousness about maintaining that balance and accountability to the self.
Yeah, because I think, we're not talking about being eccentric or being different. We're talking about more or less it's a nasty word, but the moral conduct of existence. The ethical standards of life.
I don't think it's a nasty phrase. I don't think that's
well.
Wrong.
Morals and ethics. There's a gray area there, so I don't want to imply that we're talking about that gray area. We're talking about it in terms of the essence of spirit, which is love and understanding, compassion, acceptance, things like that. Because even those words become great issues, you know. When you hear people who are being convicted of horrible crimes, and the surviving victims, or the victim, or the survivors of the people who have died, said, "We forgive you for what you've done," I think that's sometimes that's really, I don't know how people get to that place.
Right, I agree.
I'm human too, and I've got my issues. But, you know, when you get to the idea of what pure forgiveness is, which I think is has more merit than anything less than that, if one can get themselves to that place, I think that's what, if we all felt that way, we would be a softer world. But our world is harsh. There's a primitive quality to our world where when people commit heinous crimes, they say they have no soul, they have no conscience. Is that really true? Or is it that their soul is so dark?
Corrupt soul.
They do have a soul, but we're not readily able to admit that a soul can be evil.
Well, we were talking about this the other day in, our numerology book notes when we were working on the book about the darkness of the soul, whether it's the soul that's dark or the spirit.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. True. And it's our belief that the spirit really, there's really not an essence of darkness.
Unless it's a demonic spirit or something connected to Satan.
There's darkness in the soul. So if somebody says they have no conscience, they have no soul, no sociopaths, they're psychopaths, they're just pure, they have no consciousness about how harm can come to us.
That's a problem in the soul, not the spirit necessarily. It's just that the soul and the spirit have become so far removed from one another that there's not that interconnected.
Esoterically.
Right.
Unless they investigate the brain and they decide that there's something wrong with the brain waves or there's damage in the brain, and then they bring it into more of a body energy.
Right, but isn't that a karmic? I mean, if there's a imbalance that's causing, sociopathic behavior, isn't that a karmic issue? If the brain is off,
you envelop karma into the aspect of consciousness, but a doctor whose job is to study the brain.
Right, they're not going to talk about karma.
Say, well, this part of the brain has karma in it.
No.
But,
I mean, it might be good if, medicine started integrating that kind of thought into their practice.
Well, karma, consequences, you don't get away. You get your just rewards, whatever it is. Those are all aspects of criminology. In terms of crime and punishment, the aspect that somewhere we have to draw a line that in certain acts of crime there must be punishment, and we have to define what is not considered a crime as opposed to what is. And as long as there's bodily harm, I mean, it's very difficult unless it causes bodily harm or harm of some kind to win in court that somebody called you a name. What damages were incurred. When we talk about bodily damage, the definition of the character of a human being, one against the other, becomes more clearly defined. So when we get into that aspect of what is the general reasoning behind a crime in terms of the balance of an individual, then we can begin to look at it in a philosophical way, a spiritual way, but basically down to earth in a bodily way.
We have a caller, Neil. So okay. Let's bring that caller on the air. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Yeah. How do you do?
It's a little bit hard to hear you. We always have problems with the
sound.
Okay,
can you hear me now better?
That's better. Hi.
Hi, this is Lucy. I called.
Hi, Lucy. You're calling from a different number. I thought it was you, and then I looked at your number.
Yeah,
anyway, Lucy,
my...
hi.
Good.
1662. 18.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked to you last episode about your son. Is that why you're calling today? Or is it another?
Yes. No, it's the same thing.
Okay.
I just don't know what to do with at this point, just to fly there to California or just stay away. I call him, he never returns my call.
And so we kind of ran out of time last episode when she called. I think she called at the very end. So that's good because we can go in a little bit deeper in terms of what's going on. And I know you were talking about him getting a gym membership. And so there's questions about that in terms of, you know, different aspects of what he might be doing to cause him to be so distant. What's his birthday again, Lucy?
My birthday or his birthday?
No, his birthday. We have your birthday.
It's April 20, 1993.
Yes. And he's a 28-10-1.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that can be challenging.
Lucy's what general question? Should she fly out?
When's the last time you saw your son?
I saw my son 3 weeks ago. We were just with my daughter and had lunch. I decided not to go. But decided to go for the afternoon only. And we spent afternoon
only. But you're like all the way across the country, right?
Yes, yes.
And you went for lunch just to California and then went home?
Yes, because my daughter is flying American Airlines, and then I could just be with her and fly there.
Okay, because I was confused. I remember that from last episode. I was like a little bit befuddled for how you went to lunch.
Yes.
So you're wanting to maybe go back out there again and stay for an extended period of time. Would you stay with him or would you stay in a hotel?
If I go there, I'll go by the same thing overnight or 1 or 2 days. At this point, I'm just going to get points at work. Because
okay.
She won't give me the days off that I will.
So it's hard for you to get over there, but you're concerned about him because he's not really responding. And so, you know, we were asking about maybe there's some.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be in the job that he has now, but he doesn't need a resignation from the job because they keep calling me, oh, he didn't report to HR.
So he's unhappy with his job, but isn't he like, I remember from the past him being very, very focused on his career. Am I remembering correctly?
He was, but I think he's burned out because he was working long hours.
Yeah. Hmm. And when's the last time you talked to him?
Let me see, a week and a half ago when I was in Colombia. I called him and then we FaceTime.
Okay.
And that was it. Yeah, Wednesday, like this Wednesday was 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that. 3 weeks ago, I guess.
Is that where you're from, Lucy, Colombia?
I am from Colombia, yes.
Okay, so you were visiting home.
I was visiting home, yes.
Your son lives in Colombia?
No, he lives in California. Oh. He lives in California, right?
Yes, and I live in New York, upstate New York.
You're in upstate New York, and he's in California.
Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. Okay.
Well, he's 24 years old. I mean, what do you hope to accomplish? What do you think you're going to accomplish by flying out there?
I just want to know. I don't know how can I support him. How can I morally?
You're worried about his well-being. You think there's something wrong that he's not.
Does anybody speak to him?
My daughter speaks to him often.
So what does she tell you?
He feels unappreciated by the place where he works.
Well, then, if she speaks to him. Have you asked her to ask him why he's not texting you back?
Because I do a spirituality and he doesn't want to hear about it. Because I'm very positive. Even when they know me, they will do something and they will break it like a $500 jar and I say, that's fine, that's just a jar. He lost his phone. I say, well, get another one. Things like that. I don't.
So you have opposing views. He feels that your spirituality is an imposition on his lifestyle, and he doesn't like that. So I mean, that's kind of obvious.
He feels that spirituality is just something that people just they call it passive aggressive.
Well, you know,
reality is something else than that.
It's one of our topics today. You know, Lucy, he's 24 years old. If he's not responding, he says it because he doesn't want to get a lecture. He doesn't want you to preach to him. He's upset with his job. The job is the issue. I would probably get as much information as you can through the daughter. Because right now he doesn't want to text you. So I wouldn't force yourself on him. So if you're asking us
to go out, I wouldn't go out there.
I wouldn't go out. You know, this is he's not trapped in a slave trade thing, you know, where you have to go rescue, you know, Liam Nelson, you got to go rescue him. He's got some troubles going on, and you're a mother, you're concerned, you have your ideals, you've raised him a certain way.
But he's in his 20s. I mean, it's kind of it's normal for a son to separate maybe from the family. I mean, he's trying to formulate his identity and his own individuality aside, away from
if your daughter's a go-between, since it is family, and you express to your daughter that you really would like to speak to your son, and there won't be any preaching or just talk, just to let you hear it, and you don't have to be a mother and give him advice. You can just listen to him. You know, if he's going to talk to you, he's just going to want you to listen to him and understand him and support him. That's all he wants right now from you, not a lecture. So if you want to have a conversation with them, start with your daughter first and see if something can be worked out there.
And Lucy, we have to get to our next caller because we've only got 5 minutes in the show, but hopefully that helped a little bit more than, you know, the amount of time we were able to give you on Friday.
Yes.
Okay. So let us know what happens. Call us in a couple of weeks and keep us informed.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Okay, 917 is our next caller. Hi.
Hi, this is Nisa.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Nisa.
N-E-Y-S-A?
A.
Okay, I guessed and I was wrong. I apologize. Nisa, what's your birth date?
January 28th.
And the year, please?
73.
Okay. Hi, I don't think we've spoken with you before.
Hi, yeah, I have a question. Do you see me working at this place for a long time? Find a new place?
wait a minute. Do you see me working at this place? What's this place?
This place where I'm at right now. I don't want to be too specific.
Oh, I
okay.
Got it.
Can we get the field of work that you do?
Architecture.
Okay.
Here's what I'm getting. First of all, and then Christine can give you her thoughts. There's a man there that I don't feel comfortable with.
Okay.
First of all, does that make any sense to you?
Could be a different man. It could be two different people. One of them that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. So there's a problem there. If you wanted to stay, you could conform yourself in such a way, because you're talented. You could conform yourself in such a way that you could stay. But if you don't, the pressure might be pretty intense and you might end up leaving. There's some form of thought about like 5 months, maybe it was 5 months ago. Were you still there 5 months ago?
No.
Oh, when did you start?
Started in end of May.
June, July, August, September, October. So it's been 5 months. I mean, this is the fifth month.
Yeah.
So that's the five.
So you started. See, I said I went back 5 months ago, and you started essentially
in May,
5 months ago.
And in May, which is the fifth month. So there's the five, right?
Yeah,
June, July, August, September. Okay, fine.
See, Nisa. You know, what's happening right now, Nisa, is that there is a conflict. There's a true conflict going on. So I think that's accurate. It's happening. The essence of it is happening in the fifth month. You can stay there if you want. You can stay there in, for another 7 months if you want without any.
Okay.
But there's going to have to be some dialogue going on and some, you have to consider within yourself, do you want to stay and conform a little bit? Because you might have a little bit of a edgy nature about yourself. You're a strong woman, you're, you know, that's fine. And you have your opinions, that's fine. But when you're working under the, one of these two men that's probably very conventional in thinking and rigid, that might be a problem. So it all depends on your adjustment level right now.
And Nisa, we're here at the end of our broadcast today, so you came in a little late.
Wonderful.
But you're welcome to call us again reach out for private. Thank you. Okay, we are out of time, Neil, and we're back on the air on Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. So thank you, callers and listeners. We will speak with you then. Bye-bye.